Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Jeff Jackson, and today, actually, my normal cohort in crime, Ed Campion, is not here. He's actually in Africa visiting the church that he helped plant. But today, I'm here with one of our Shepherd Staff missionaries who's in the midst of doing a church plant in a European city, and he happens to be visiting, and so I tried to flag him down and get him to come and talk with me and maybe discuss a topic that a lot of you are interested in, specifically the idea of church planting, and then even more specifically, the idea of doing that in another country and in a language and culture that is very different from our own. So I'd like to introduce you to Ben Spector, and he's going to give you a little bit of his backstory before I start hitting him with some questions.
Yeah, hi guys. Yeah, my name is Ben Spector. I grew up on the East Coast of America in the Philadelphia area. My home church is Calvary Chapel of Philadelphia. And so I accepted Christ and started following him when I was in high school. And then in 2009, I went to Calvary Chapel Bible College in Europe. It's in Hungary. I met my wife there. And so after meeting, I finished my program there in 2010. It was a missions training program. And then 2011, we got married in March of 2011. And then in September 2011, we moved to Europe, to church plant.
That's awesome. In fact, you know, that reminds me, you know, you met your future bride at Bible College. When I used to teach at the Calvary Chapel Bible College in Marietta, a lot of people found husbands and wives there, and we used to call it Calvary Chapel Bridal College.
Yes.
Ring before spring or your money back.
Yes.
And so, actually, I was never opposed to that. I think that's a great way to find a husband or wife.
Yeah.
That's got their heart set on the Lord and want to serve the Lord. So that's awesome.
It worked out for me.
So. Amen. So, Ben, tell me a little bit about your sort of passion to plant a church there. Mm-hmm. And what led you to be interested in that?
Yeah. So the country that I serve in, we do know that there's not a huge evangelical Christian presence or a presence of people who truly follow Jesus Christ. And so we do believe that planting a local church will be the best thing for the city that we're in, and that can in turn most effectively reach the people of that country and change that country in the long term. So the reason that we're church planting is to see people's lives change, see people come to know Jesus Christ, and therefore their lives are changed, and then that in turn changes the city that we're in, and therefore that country.
Yeah, and you know, that really resonates with our hearts. At Shepherd Staff, you know, we believe that the local church is God's primary instrument, his primary vehicle through which he wants to reach the nation, and obviously you're of the same conviction, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Okay. So a local church, you know, it needs to be reaching the community where it's at, obviously, but it's part of this bigger thing that God's doing. And one of the things that we like to emphasize time and time again in the church plant that I did and the church plant that Ed did in Africa, that from the first time we met as a church, we wanted the people who were going to come to know the Lord in that church from day one to understand that what was going on here is part of this bigger thing. And we, as people in this local community, need to be aware of what he's doing around the world and participating in that. Do you kind of share the same conviction or have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, we do share that same conviction. I think that we see in Scripture as well that, and it's God's heart to reach this world and to build his kingdom. So giving people in a local church, kind of helping them develop an identity where they feel like what we're doing is partaking in this bigger thing that God is doing around the world to save people, to redeem them, to change them, to redeem his creation in the end, mm-hmm. Really gives purpose, true purpose and meaning to their lives.
Yeah, that's great. And so what I want to do is I want to explore the idea of, you know, church planting in a country and among people who don't speak our language and who are of obviously different cultures and from different religious backgrounds and worldviews than we are. One of the things that I want to emphasize as we go through this next little discussion that we're going to have is that, you know, the church planting that's taking place in this country, there's been a major emphasis on church planting here in America. And there's a lot of people that are taking church planting very seriously and getting training and being equipped and so forth to do that. And so it's my conviction, I know it's your conviction too, Ben, that that church planting should be taken seriously. And when we're trying to do that in a country where the people speak a different language and are not from our culture, we need to take culture and language acquisition seriously. So how did you come to that conclusion, and what were some of your initial thoughts about how to do that?
Yeah, so we, going into to church planting in a foreign culture, we knew that we needed to take time to learn language and culture, because that's what we had been told. But it wasn't until we moved there that we actually realized that how important it was, and is, I should say. So when we showed up, we did take time to, our story is kind of very complicated, but we were committed in the beginning to taking at least 2-3 years to...
Wow, that's a long time.
It is, yeah. taking time to really dive into language. So what we did in moving over there, we got connected with other people that were already, that had an established ministry there, so that we could come into an assistant role so that we would be freed up to actually have time to do language study and culture acquisition. Because if we just came in and did ministry right away, we wouldn't have had any
time. And that's kind of the question that's provoked in people's minds is, hey, isn't taking the time to learn the language and culture, isn't that a distraction from actually doing ministry? Why should you take 2 or 3 years to learn the language and culture when you can start immediately using a translator?
Yeah.
Why didn't you choose that path?
Well, I think that, you know, I've been in country for almost 5 years now, and looking back, you know, what I tell people is that before I went out to be a missionary church planner, I thought that doing foreign missionary work was basically, there was a romantic idea attached to it, which was healthy, I think, in some aspects. But I thought that it was basically, I go to another country and I preach the gospel and people get saved. Which is the end goal.
Yes.
I believe that still to this day. But I realized just how important doing language and culture acquisition is, because I think that we think of it as this kind of obstacle that we need to get over so that we can do, so that we can preach and we can teach and we can disciple and see local churches. It's kind of the same way we would view an operation. You get an operation to get it over with,
right,
so that you're healthy.
Yes.
But now I say it is part of the pie. It's not like something that you need to get over. It is itself like what you're there for. Because if it's missions is about preaching the gospel, but it is also about learning to love the people that you're serving, and you're loving them by learning their language and culture. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So it's kind of like, you know, the process of learning the language and culture isn't like this necessary hill to climb to get to some destination.
Yes. Yeah.
The journey itself is part of the value, and it honors God. How does it honor God?
Well, I think, I mean, if we look at it from a scriptural standpoint,
yes,
we see that Jesus made himself known to us in very relatable ways. I mean, we as Western Christians, we can, let's say you're doing your devotions in the morning and God convicts your heart about the fact that you've been spending way too much time on your screen, on your smartphone.
Yes.
Yeah. You're too distracted.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, okay, the Bible doesn't say anything about smartphones, but God convicts you about that in a very relatable way.
Yes.
That's very real to you in 2016.
Right.
Well, he came down in flesh, spoke our language, made himself known to us, and talks to us in ways that we understand.
Yes.
So if we don't go to other countries and do that, that's actually misrepresenting God's heart.
Yes.
And then in the New Testament, as a famous, you know, Paul Hibbert, is that his name?
Paul Hibbert.
Wrote Anthropological Insights for Missionaries.
Correct.
In that book, there's this great section where he talks about when we go over, we basically create Western colonies if we're not learning the language and culture. And we're doing the same things that the Jews did to the Gentiles, and saying you must be circumcised.
Oh yeah.
In order to follow, in order to be saved.
Yeah.
And so we can do the same thing by forcing our Western culture on other people, because it's actually not God's heart for them.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's a really good angle that I think most people don't think about. They understand who the Judaizers were.
Yes.
And who, you know, the idea that here was this group of Jews that followed Jesus, and they wanted every Gentile to become a Jew in order to follow Jesus. And a lot of times they don't make the connection that if we don't learn the language and culture, that's the same thing that we're doing. So I really like that. That's really good insight. And I think also learning the language, and the scripture clearly teaches that all these languages were created by God.
Yes.
And each language and the culture that language is part of, each of them reflects God's glory in its own unique way. So when we go in and we don't take the time to learn their language and learn their culture, basically what we're saying is that the language that God gave you to glorify him isn't as important as mine, and it's your responsibility to figure out how to understand me rather than my responsibility to figure out how to communicate to you.
Yes. And it misrepresents God.
Yes, it does.
It completely misrepresents God to the people, because it's actually telling them God didn't, you, it's almost like saying to the people, you have to work your way in some ways to God.
Yes.
Because you have to learn this new life. You have to do all these things where God says, I come to you.
Right.
And I accept you just as you are. Now, people are called to change.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about. I think that we understand there's a distinction here.
Right. And I think an interesting angle too, which could be a whole nother podcast, which maybe we might do, is you were given the freedom and the confidence by your home church.
Yes.
To spend 3 years learning the language and culture. You weren't pressured by them to say, hey, you need to produce measurable things so we can justify our support for you, right?
Yes. Yeah. They were very supportive from the beginning. And not once did we feel some pressure where we have to produce all these things and we're spending too much time on language and culture, because we're in it for the long haul. This is a long-term investment. So in order to best reach the people we're going to, we needed to invest the most time that we could into learning language and culture. And therefore, the fruit that's going to come of that, I believe, is going to be a lot more, it's going to have a lot more quality to it than if we just spent 3 months trying to learn language and then tried to do something.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when I've done a lot of ministry with refugees over the years, and there's a really sharp guy that heads a ministry that does, you know, counseling and stuff for kids that have been traumatized because of the refugee experience. And he talks about the three P's in a pod of refugee ministry. And basically the idea is the pod is our connection to Jesus as the vine. And, you know, we're the branches. He's the vine. And the three P's are presence, practice, and then proclamation. And the idea being that you are present among people. And as you're present among people, you learn about them and about their way of life. And then you do practical things. And because you have presence and you have practice, now your proclamation is able to be done. And when I've shared that at different places, I've gotten pushback. And part of the pushback is, no, Jesus started, you know, when he just started with proclamation. He started preaching. And I have to point out that, wait a minute, he spent 30 years of presence before, and then practice before he actually started proclaiming.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's different mindsets and different methods of learning language and culture. Share with us what you discovered and the method and you know the way you learned the language and culture.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said previously, we did take specific time in the beginning to learn language and culture. So that was our job.
Right.
Every day.
Was that like an academic approach, reading books and grammar and all that?
So when we started, we did go to a language school for foreigners.
Okay.
And we did that for a few months. And then we ended up, long story, but we ended up moving to a different part of the country, working with a local church there, fully national church. And a woman in that church was a professor of language that we learned. And so we had private lessons with her. We did 6 hours a week. Mm. It was 3 times a week, 2 hours each time.
Okay.
But it wasn't just that. We would go home and study after those periods. I would even go to the length of, we can get into methodology.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the methods that we used is you know, when people are talking to you as a foreigner, they talk to you in specific ways because you don't understand as much.
Yes.
So we would have her retell stories from her week. Just, yes. She took her kids to the park. Okay, tell us what you did. Just like you were talking to anybody.
Okay.
And we would record those times.
Yes.
Because that's real language.
Right.
She's not talking to us as foreigners.
Right.
She's talking how she would talk to anybody, and we're getting the real stuff we need to learn. We would record that. We would go home, and I would literally stop and start every sentence and write. So I would listen to a sentence, write it down, you know.
Right. Wow.
And then I would sit there, and now I'm getting real words. I'm seeing this sentence structure. I'm seeing all these things, and I was able to study that way.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, so it took some time.
It did.
Effort and some brain power.
It did. It took a lot, like, you just had to get low.
Yeah.
People laugh at you a lot.
Yeah.
And But the payoff is big because then the people love you and see that you love them. You know, the country that we're serving in is a smaller country compared to the States.
Yes.
300 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the first things that anybody will ask us is why you came here and learned our language.
Right.
We should learn your language
right.
to get by in the world.
Right.
And I learned their language.
Right.
And that is off the bat testimony to who God is and why we're there.
Yeah. And what a declaration of how important they are to God.
Yes.
And to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure anything can communicate that better or more clearly. So, you know, the people that study these things and have trained people on culture and language acquisition have come to the conclusion over the years that, you know, it used to be you would study culture and then you would study language. And they've come to the conclusion you can't separate the two. So as you were learning the language, what specific things did you do to acquire the culture while you were learning the language? What does that look like in practical ways?
Yeah, the main practical way was we just spent as much time as we could with people.
Yes.
Talking with people, making mistakes, being with people, going, having people over for dinner, going over their houses for dinner or lunch. The country mm-hmm. was serving lunch is the biggest meal.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting coffee with people. One of the guys in the national church that I was working with, I worked a lot with the youth there. And I really got to disciple him, and now he's one of the pillars in that church, helping mm-hmm. run the youth group now. And he doesn't speak any English.
Wow.
No English.
No English, yeah.
No English.
Yeah.
So right. So it was really being with people and just talking, and asking people to not speak English with us.
Yes.
However, that might be easier.
Yeah.
But it in the long term, that's not what we need, and it's not what they want.
Right.
And so we would ask people, don't speak English with us, and we would specifically ask them, as uncomfortable as it is for you, please correct us when we make a mistake, even if it's little.
Wow.
We don't want to learn the wrong way.
Right.
And then develop a habit that's a bad habit, which are hard to break.
Yeah.
So when people would correct us, that helped us out a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, that was a huge step. And I want, you know, I think the listeners would be blessed to rethink about it for a minute, that you and your wife started attending a church and you were the only Americans in that church and only a handful of people spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how did you come to that conclusion that that's what you needed to do?
Well, one of the ways is we kind of stumbled into it because the pastor at that church, he's a national. He's been pastoring for about 25 years now.
Yes.
Experienced. He's from that country. He knows best what is mm-hmm. going on in that country, what needs to be done. And
mm-hmm.
they had experience with missionaries personally at their church
mm-hmm.
and other missionaries from different organizations in the country
yes.
who did not learn the language.
Okay.
And they basically said, we don't want those people here. They're a nuisance and we have to babysit them. We have to do everything for them.
Yes.
And, so when we showed up to the place that we were in this church, it was like we had to prove ourselves. Everybody expected us to fail.
Yes.
But hearing from them and seeing firsthand how ineffective or how ineffective these people are, that missionaries that go over and they don't really learn the language.
Yes.
We said, well, we don't want to do that, so let's just try this.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So it is trial and error, but we said, this is really what we need to do, because the people there, they cannot connect with you if you don't speak their language. They feel that there's just distance between you and them, and that's just not a good thing. So
now this is kind of a deeper question, okay?
Sure.
But I want to throw it out to you and kind of get you on the fly to answer this. Okay. in learning, are there cultural traits, and maybe you can give some examples of these, are there certain cultural traits and beliefs that people have that you literally cannot get a handle on if you don't know their language? Are there some examples of that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. One is a term, it literally translated, it means community.
Okay.
So let's say I just learned language. I open up a dictionary.
Yes.
I memorize the dictionary.
Yes.
I come across this word, literally translated, it just means community in English.
Right.
Now, naturally, when my wife and I learned this word, her name's Emily, we put our definition of community as Americans on this word. So we force that on a word.
Yes.
Later down the road, almost two years into our time there.
Wow.
Okay, careful. I mean, reality check.
Yeah.
2 years. We've known this word a long time.
Yeah.
We've heard it being used, but we were using our definition of it.
Yes.
Now I sit down with somebody, they start using it in a context that's unfamiliar to me, and now this whole cultural, this very deep, important part of their culture is revealed to me, which their community is that everybody has a group of like five friends that they meet with. It is their life. It's like a clique on steroids.
Right.
Peer pressure on steroids.
Right.
And
I mean, it's the source of their identity. Their individual identity is found in the group at a higher level than their own individual identity.
Yes.
Yes.
And so there's, and you know, I don't think we have time to really go into detail right now, but basically this cultural trait completely, you know, it has so big of a definition connected to it.
Okay.
That that's a prime example for us of when you learn language, you start, if you're learning it the right way, you're going to start learning culture.
Yes.
Because the two go together.
Right.
I mean, in English, an example is we greet people we say, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Now, if we're real with ourselves, we don't really care.
No.
We care, but we don't care.
It's strictly a greeting.
It's strictly
a greeting.
And
because we're insiders, we know it's just a greeting.
So nobody gets offended.
Right.
And so what happens in America, you say, I meet my friend in the parking lot of Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I say, hey, man, how are you? Let's go in and get a coffee. He doesn't respond.
Right.
Then we get our coffee and we sit down at a table. And then I say, so how are you really?
Yeah.
And then he knows in our culture, that means, tell me how you're really doing. I want to know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now over there, how are you is a deep, deep question.
Right.
So you don't ask it if you don't have time to listen. So my wife and I would offend people in the beginning because we're just like, hey, how are you? Literally translating it.
Yeah.
And then walking away and saying hi to the next person.
Yeah.
And those people are all hurt because it's like we didn't listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So you used it strictly. The words are an interrogative question asking about a condition that somebody's in.
Yes.
The words, that's what they mean.
Yes.
But in our culture, those words are used strictly as a greeting.
Exactly.
So if you're an insider, you know that's just a greeting. But if you're an outsider learning our language, and I've heard people say that from other cultures and languages here, you Americans lie all the time.
Yeah.
And what do you mean? Well, because every American asks another American, how are you? And it's just like, oh, I'm fine, when they got a lot of problems and they're never going to actually talk about their problems. So you lie. Well, no, we don't really lie. It's just that you're an outsider and you don't understand that that's actually just a greeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually the way that we respond in America reveals things about our culture.
Yes, it does.
You have to be fine all the time.
All the time.
Because that's what everybody says. Oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
When your son just died yesterday.
Yeah.
And then when you ask again, they'll say, I'm horrible.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there's a contrast, and that's just part of our culture.
Yeah.
So that's a prime example. We learn culture and language at the same time, and they help build upon each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you discovered or maybe you have another example of this or whatever, but as you've learned the language and the culture of the people that you live among and serve now, do you see a lot of their cultural traits and habits or more in line with the the what's recorded in the scripture than maybe ours are as Americans?
Yes. Specifically, I think just off the top of my head, one that I can think of is with money.
Okay.
People in the country we serve in don't have this, nearly as much money as we do here in America.
Yeah.
Normal, as like a middle class person would have.
Yeah.
We're talking a big contrast.
Yeah.
And now here in America, if we hear somebody's in need,
right,
we don't automatically think, I'm just going to give you money right here on the spot.
Right.
We go home, we talk about it. Oh, maybe we shouldn't. I don't know. It becomes a source of, we're not really sure what to do sometimes.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Over there, people are very quick. If you're friends,
yeah,
meaning you're in the same community, you love that person, you always offer.
Yeah.
And you always help the other person.
Right.
So in the country we serve in, there's like almost, we live and serve in a city of 1.5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's less than 600 homeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, no homeless people.
Right.
Because people just take care of each other.
Right.
And that's a cultural trait.
Yes.
That.
Right.
Even people that aren't Christians give into.
Yeah.
So you can see how that's just a very
natural
thing.
So in that culture, like dependence and interdependence are actually virtues.
Yes.
And they deepen relationships versus in our culture, independence is a virtue and it's a weakness if you need to depend on other people or interdepend on other people regularly. Very, very interesting. Okay, Ben, so I want to ask you one other thing, and this is kind of a thought-provoking way to look at this. Do you have a good example of how to communicate to an American the importance of learning culture and language?
Yes, I
okay.
do.
Okay, share it with us.
So I think that the thing that best encapsulates this for me is imagine a man from Thailand who moves to America to church plant. Now, we're talking about a man, he's not church planting in America for Thai people.
Yes.
He's church planting in America. God has put it on his heart to come here to serve Americans.
Okay.
And so he gets saved. He doesn't really know anything about Western culture. He knows about 5 words in English.
Yes.
Because he's watched a few movies.
Okay.
He has about 3 times as much money as everybody in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he moves here and he tries to start a Bible study in his home.
Okay.
But he's trying to learn English, he's going to language school, but it's not really going well, and he thinks, you know what, I'm not really reaching the people I came here to serve, and this is just taking too much time, it's too hard, I'm going to go get a translator.
Yes.
And so he starts using a translator, but then he gets so busy in ministry, he can't stop using the translator, but really he's just limited to talking to Americans who know Thai, which by the way isn't very many.
Yes. Yes.
Because he can only speak Thai. If he does have a counseling appointment, he has to have a translator there, which...
Yes.
So, when we create this sort of picture, it really hits home with us as Americans because we say, I just ask myself, how effective would that guy be in America?
Yeah. And would I go to a church of a guy that doesn't speak my language and stop learning and speaks to me through a translator?
Would you want him as your pastor?
Exactly.
Would you want to do marriage counseling with him and another member of the church is translating for this?
Yes. Yeah. Great analogy.
You know, it's just, it's a very weird concept that we would say he's not going to be effective in teaching the people how to culturally reach the needs of their community and reach their own culture because he doesn't understand it.
Yes.
And nobody's going to want to come.
Yes.
So he's going to be very limited. And I just think that that's, in some senses, would be bad stewardship.
Yes.
And the problem is that we can tend to do this in going overseas because we think that, well, most people know English in other countries, so it'll kind of work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
Yeah. And culturally, they're willing to sit and listen to us because culturally, they wouldn't be honoring you if they didn't pay attention to what you're saying and coming to what you were inviting them to.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. To just wrap this up, I want to just ask you a question, and maybe you can summarize your thoughts with this. You're talking to a young guy. He feels called to be a church planter in another country around the world that doesn't speak our language and culture. Give him 3 pointers and set him on the right direction.
Yeah. I would say get make sure you have a home church.
Okay.
That would be the first thing I would say. You need to have a home church. I think a lot of people think that when you become a missionary, you automatically become super Jesus. And it's not true.
Right.
Have a home church. Be serving in that home church.
Okay.
You need a home church to send you out and be behind you emotionally, spiritually, and financially.
Okay.
Second thing, I would say go in learning language. Obviously, it depends. You know, read up on how to learn languages.
Yes.
Do research on the country that you're going to.
Yes.
Before you go.
Okay.
And get how to learn language reading.
Yes.
Very important stuff.
Okay.
And then the third thing I would say is you need to be a good steward over what you're doing. So really consider, what are you going to do? If you're doing church planning, it's going to be a longer term thing.
Yes.
Go in and plan to learn language and culture, because you know, I can't emphasize enough that that has been the, we could not do what we do if we did not learn language and culture.
Right. Yeah, so, that's good. That's great advice. It's been a blessing to talk with you, Ben, and we appreciate you taking the time. We're going to be praying for you as you head back to the field. And
thank you.
We're blessed to be able to serve you as a ministry. So in closing, Ben referenced a book, one of the top books that I always recommend to missionaries, by a guy named Paul Hebert. It's called Anthropological Insights for Missionaries. Big title. Paul Hebert, H-I-E-B-E-R-T. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking about becoming a missionary, I highly recommend that you read that book. It gets into culture. It gets into worldview. It talks about the cycle of missionary culture shock and a few other things. So can't recommend that highly enough. So with that said, thanks again, Ben. God bless you. And this is Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators signing off.